Hey guys, I'm happy to announce a partnership with Reformation Heritage Books. Do you want to start reading the Puritans but just don't know where to begin? Puritan Treasures for Today from Reformation Heritage Books makes the riches of these godly writers of old accessible for the modern reader. With updated language and helpful instructions, these classic works from John Owen, Jeremiah Burroughs, and more are the perfect starting point for the curious reader. Learn more about the Puritan Treasures for Today at heritagebooks.org/puritantreasures. Use coupon code SHEPHERDS for 10% off your order. That's heritagebooks.org/puritantreasures. Coupon code SHEPHERDS. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome back to the show. Hope you guys are having a great day today. I'm super excited to have a repeat guest on. I think I've had Chris Wiley on now two or three times. I can't remember it all. It all blends together. But Chris, how you doing, brother?
Yeah, I'm fine, Jared. How are you?
Fantastic. I don't know. It was maybe August, I think, was the Blue Collar Confessionalism Conference. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Okay. And you made a passing comment that I'll reference here in just a little bit, and it's been sticking with me. And so we're going to have a good conversation, but we're going to go ahead and pray and ask the Lord's help, and then we'll get into it. So let's pray. Father, we thank you for this time. I thank you for a brother and all that you're doing in and through him. I thank you for the good work that's been done. And even just the title of the conference that we were able to be a part of. And I was there as an attendee, and Chris was there to speak, Blue Collar Confessionalism. And I just thank you that he's really pulled those two things together in such a helpful way. And in this conversation today, God, I just ask that we be challenged and encouraged to help us to be men that do work with our hands, that we work to problem solve, we fix things rather than always try to buy something new, and we do what you've called us to do in the area of working with our hands. Help us to have calloused hands and watch you work through that process. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, so you know, I think most of my listeners know who you are at the end. I'll have you tell people where to find more about what you do and what you've written and podcasts and all that good stuff. But you were speaking at this conference, and it was on 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11. You referenced this passage. I'll just go ahead and read it. Here's what it says. And aspire to live quietly, to mind your own affairs, and to work with your hands as we instructed you. And then the next verse, so that you may walk properly before outsiders, to be dependent upon no one. So that a proper independence. And so your passing comment was, when's the last time you heard a sermon about working with your hands? And I got to thinking, well, never. So let's talk about it. Well, that's a command. It's there. So what's it mean, and what should we think about it?
I think there are a couple of ways to approach it. I think that there's the larger, you know, sort of framework where he's talking about, you know, being respected by outsiders and being dependent on no one. And, you know, he's speaking to an audience for whom mostly, you know, people made a living with their hands. So there's that. And I think we need to just acknowledge that up front and say, okay, we live in a different world today. There are lots of ways to make a living that don't entail handiwork. And then too, I think there's also a tendency, particularly in reform circles, to sort of boil the scriptures down to commands and gospel. And we leave out this large swath called wisdom. We don't like to talk about that because that implies an exercise of judgment on the part of an individual. You know, so like when you think about, you know, the examples that we have in scripture of wise men, you know, you can think of that, I think, really paradigmatic episode with Solomon and the two women and the baby. And it's not like he pulled out the book of Moses and said, if any time two women come to you claiming that they have, you know that the child is theirs, and they're arguing with each other, pull out a sword and threaten to cut the kid in half and see what happens. There's no command for that. In fact, we're told this is a demonstration of his wisdom. So why is it that we mentally shut down In this area. Well, I think it's because we don't like leaving much room for wisdom. We just want to-do lists. And if you do all the things on the to-do list, everything is guaranteed to work out great. But what that means then is that we just don't think about stuff like this. And yeah, it's an imperative. Paul is saying work with your hands. But, you know, within that framework, that's the way you would remain independent. That's the way you would make a living working, you know, working with your hands. But does that mean that it's insignificant, that this is something we just write off? I don't think so. I think that working with your hands keeps you literally in touch with the physical world. And we live in a world now that is sort of living in a virtual reality where people are less and less exposed to the character of physical things. This is one of the reasons why we entertain just crazy stuff. Transgenderism is an example. You know, when you actually work with farm animals, for example, or you actually work with wood, or you realize, okay, I can't make it do anything I want.
Right.
And, you know, even when we, and you know, employ industrial measures to just make it do what we want, we pulverize it. When you think of like medium density fiber, or what is it? It's just pulverized wood so that we can make it perfectly smooth and perfectly kind of conducive to things that we want to do with it. You know, like when you try to you run a piece of MDF through a router table, it's just beautiful. It goes through like butter. You actually work with like, you know, hardwoods, maple or oak, it's not quite that way.
Yeah.
You had to kind of know your woods. And so, but anyway, so, but in order to create MDF, you need, you know, some pretty powerful machinery to pulverize wood and turn it to dust. And, but the world that we find ourselves in comes prefabricated. It's already got form and character and things that it's good for and things that maybe aren't so good. So for example, you know, you don't build a fence out of balsa wood. You build, you know, little airplanes out of balsa. You know, you build fencing if you want it to last out of cypress or cedar or redwood, because it has some intrinsic characteristics that make it rot resistant and that kind of stuff. So you have to kind of study the world and understand it. But the only way you can do that in a practical way, if you're not a scientist, is to actually work with it. To kind of learn the intrinsic character of things. So I think that there's something to be said for that. I also think that, you know, as human beings, our bodies are not garbage, you know, stuff that we just dispose of. They have a future goal that, you know, we need to put off the perishable and put on the imperishable. But then Paul talks about our bodies being like a seed, you know, that's something that is the basis for the next body. So consequently, and then even creation itself, if we look at, you know, Romans 8, it has a future. So all of these things should give us a higher regard. And then, of course, there's the incarnation, you know, think about that. So we have the creation, incarnation. We've got a new heavens and new earth, which seem to have their origins, or their at least what, you know, God was working with to bring about those new realities, the world that we live in right now. So there's a lot that we should be thinking about in terms of our interaction with the physical world. And then that's not even getting into the significance of you know, the physical world for, say, a pastor and his ability to interact with, say, blue collar men. If you have some skills, if you've got some history, if you've got, and you're somewhat knowledgeable, you know, when it comes to working with your hands, it makes it a whole lot easier to interact with guys that do that every day for a living. And that's not insignificant. That's huge.
Yeah, I think one of the fastest ways pastors can lose the respect of their men is by depending upon them to do free work for them at the parsonage or in their life or whatever it may be. I don't know how to do anything. Come fix my stuff for me and don't send me a bill.
Right.
But I think it is critical for guys. So in the Old Testament, you have commands in gospel. New Testament, you have commands in gospel. And then you have wisdom laced in between all of it, and from the wisdom literature, and then even applying wisdom in this case to recognize, okay, we don't have to work with our hands in the exact same way as we used to. Even 100 years ago, there were shoe cobblers, and where's the shoe cobbler anymore? Origin USA out in Maine, they're making their own boots, but they're about the only people that are making boots and repairing boots anymore, except maybe a small town shop. Or, you know, when it comes to even just smithies. We don't even have blacksmiths anymore, except for hobby blacksmiths. You know, all these trades that have required down through the ages, working with your hands. Okay, that's not there anymore. So how do you apply a command like this? So simply, so you grew up kind of like I did, with a dad who did, he was kind of a jack of all trades, knew a lot of stuff, but really didn't transfer that information. My dad would say, Jared, you have to be within screaming distance in the neighborhood. So I would go out in the neighborhood, and then I would hear my dad scream to the top of his lungs. I'd be eight houses down, and I'd run down and hold the flashlight. And he'd change the alternator, and then I'd go play with my buddy, you know, down the road again.
Right.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about Rise Nutrition. It's located in Anna, Illinois, right here in Southern Illinois. Their mission is to empower the community through wellness. They do this through providing clean supplements and education. Rise provides monthly education seminars about a variety of topics, from how to build macros, the best pre-workout for fitness goals, what vitamins to take as we get older, and so much more. For the local listeners, they have a full-time nutritionist on site, and that's something that no other supplement store is doing in Southern Illinois. They also have fresh fruit smoothies that are made with clean products. For the non-locals, it can be hard to find clean supplements. The crew at Rise Nutrition can help you get the best and the cleanest stuff to help you get strong. Stop buying from the other guys and go to risenutrition.shop and use the coupon code SHEPHERDS10 for 10% off online or in-store. On another note, two of our elders train at Rise Performance Gym with our good buddy, Preacher Man Joey Hawkins. So if you are looking for a gym, head on over to Rise.
So he's kind of a jack of all trades, but I've had to figure out along the way how to change my own oil, and you know, even just with mowing my yard and measure my time's valuable. So, but I know working with my hands is valuable, and then I need more tools to be able to do this or that, whatever it may be. So just for the average guy, applying wisdom to a command like that, for somebody like me that maybe had a dad and grandpa that was kind of a jack of all trades, but didn't pick up a whole lot, just doesn't naturally know how to do things. I can't see it and figure it out how it works. I got to watch the video kind of thing. What is the wisdom application then for a guy that may even, you know, be less down the road than I am, that doesn't even have the tools yet, doesn't even mow his own yard, doesn't power wash his house one time a year? What's the moral imperative then of it? Am I sinning in this regard by outsourcing all this, or do I need to pursue being able to figure out and problem solve and save money by fixing this rather than buying new? What's the moral imperative then with a command like this?
There's not so much a moral imperative as it is a wise course of action. I do think that the moral imperative is to not be unnecessarily dependent upon people. And as, so if your skill set is maybe, has to do with maybe, I don't know, code, writing code or something like that, which, by the way, it looks like it's not the smartest place to go, you know, recently because of developments with artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. I remember we were told that, you know, if you could just code, your future was assured. Now I'm talking to guys saying, nah, I don't know about that. But anyway, I do think that there's this, I think there are kind of a range of justifications from the standpoint of this is a wise course of action. One has to do with independence. You know, if you just think about your ability to interact with, say, a tradesman, one of the things that happens real quick is they measure you up. And if you have some facility and an ability to understand the nature of the work, real quick, they go from thinking of you as somebody that they can maybe take advantage of to somebody that they better be careful around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So just that is enough to justify, you know, taking an interest in things if you just want to make certain that you're not being taken advantage of. Now, that may lead people to the wrong conclusion that there are just all sorts of people out there that are on the make. In my personal experience, when it comes to guys in the trade, you got kind of two extremes. There are the guys who are on the make, but then there are just really excellent guys who are just high caliber, high quality guys. And they'll come around and maybe give you a price that maybe you think is a little bit higher than you should pay. But generally, it's because those guys have so much work that they can, they can justify the stuff that they're asking for. So, you know, there's that. But then when we think about the goodness of God's creation, I really do think that there's a way of knowing the world through your hands that you don't have any other way to employ. In other words, there's no alternative. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've when we think about intelligence, you know, one of the things I think has been useful here in the last, say, 50 years is we've kind of expanded our range of categories when it comes to intelligence. So, you know, a lot of people will talk about like emotional intelligence. What basically they mean by that is you've got, you know, capacity for empathy. You can kind of pick up on nonverbal cues about people's needs and stuff like that. And so you're kind of socially smart. And we all know people who are like really, really good at maybe a certain thing and just idiots everywhere else in life. You know, it's the nutty professor, the absent-minded professor phenomenon, you know, that kind of thing. It's like everybody, like if you have one thing that you need to know about that particular thing, that's the guy to go to, but
right,
you
right.
don't go to that guy for anything else. And I'm afraid a lot of pastors are that way. I mean, they're just, they don't have any knowledge about anything outside of this boutique, you know, and sort of kind of knowledge category.
Yeah.
But then, so there's that. So I think that, you know, but I do think that there's also a way that working with your hands informs even your thinking about theology and the scriptures and so forth. So many of the things that are alluded to in scripture are drawn from, you know, agriculture, husbandry, mm-hmm. even building trades. So, for example, like when we think about the Lord's words about the wise and the foolish builders, right? You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, he demonstrates an understanding related to foundations that, you know, your typical guy who's never worked with foundations wouldn't handle. So I've worked with foundations. Right. I mean, I've been, you know, I remember working in the middle of Kansas and, you know, 95% humidity at 100 degrees covered with form oil. You
know? Sounds awesome.
Yeah, yes. You don't know misery until you find yourself in that spot. But there are things about working on foundations that just are it's worth considering when you think about that illustration. So, for example, why would anyone want to build on sand? Well, it's easy, mm-hmm. first of all. It's really easy. And then often sand is located in some great places where you have a nice ocean view.
Right. Yeah.
So there's that. But the other thing about it is it's, as I noted, really hard work. But also, you don't appreciate it unless it's wrong. In other words, you never walk into a house and say, man, this house has a really great foundation. Mm-hmm. You know it?
Yeah.
You know, you just, yeah, you walk in. You know. So you look at it from the outside. Most of it's beneath the surface. When it comes to foundations, you don't think about it unless it's cracked mm-hmm. or crumbling or not even. So I actually have an experience with this. This is kind of a wild story. When I was involved in commercial real estate, I was working with a particular company, and I represented guys who were divesting themselves of their properties before the big crash in 2008. So it was a lot of fun because I was sort of like the Cassandra of the market, just saying, get out, get out, get out. So I was helping people get out. But anyway, we went to this particular housing development, and we went to a house that we called the sick house. The reason we called it the sick house is because the builder decided that it would be a great idea that to build a house out of the leftovers of other houses. So, like when you have a you know, a pour for a foundation, there's always some leftover, right? So he actually formed this thing up and would just pour in the leftover concrete into the forms. So what that means is that in a regular pour, it's soft leveling because you pour mm-hmm. it all at the same time, right? And and gravity helps you. It's not like you have to go around checking it to make sure it's level. It is level because you poured it all at once. You know, you have the vibrator that you put in to make sure all the air bubbles are out. But it settles, and you can just go like the next day and start framing up mm-hmm. or when it's no longer green. But anyway, so this guy did this, which meant that it was a totally uneven foundation. It wasn't self-leveling, but the framers didn't know that.
Okay.
So they came in assuming that everything was like normal.
Of course.
And
right.
framed it up, which meant that, you know, it's out of level throughout the house, like by maybe a half inch here, an inch here, you know, it's that kind of thing. And you'd walk around the house and everything kind of looked okay, but you start to feel queasy after a while.
What's going on here?
Yeah, that's right. It's like, I don't know why I'm sick.
Yeah.
You'd get out of the house and like say, man, what was going on? Well, we discovered what had been going on. It was that. So foundations are huge in many ways. Why this builder did that, I don't know. But
yeah.
Apart from just being a cheapskate. But but you wouldn't know this kind of stuff if you didn't have any personal acquaintance with.
Yeah,
you know,
great point. Great point.
So I'm a roofer. I inspect and sell roofs. And this is something I did 15 years ago and had a buddy of mine started his own company. And so I started doing this again. And so went with him to retrain, kind of get reacquainted. And the first house we went to was kind of like the house you just mentioned. And we called it That's Good Enough House. And it looked like it was a guy that didn't build it. And everything he did was, that's good enough. That'll do.
Right.
And the inside of the house, you'd look on the backside of the house and it was bowed in.
Yeah.
And you'd walk around it and the stonework on the front, it got progressively worse the higher you got. And the mortar was caked on. And it looked like some guy that just, you know, he didn't have a wife, just threw it all together, was drinking beers, and just built his house. Good enough. So the moral imperative then of applying wisdom would be in the area of, if I'm being unnecessarily dependent upon people and I am avoiding work with my hands that I could do if I took time to figure this out. And because I'm not taking time to do this, I'm either squandering wealth by having to go out and buy something that I could just repair, or I'm having to outsource to people that I'm losing respect just by outsourcing it. And so the application really of all of that, it's pretty multifaceted there for a guy that's listening in. It's like, man, I've never even considered this. I've never done anything. I mean, change my air filters in my house or, even the oil in my vehicle. Not that there's a litany of things that you've got to run through, but if you never do anything, then most likely there's some aspect here of, you know, neglect of, you know, being faithful with what God has given you to pursuit of wealth and building, or maybe the problem of burying the minas in the handkerchief and not doing anything with them, that sort of thing. So what's your trajectory here? Because you're kind of known as this guy. You're kind of known as the guy that pulls these two worlds together of, it's like the, warrior poet. John Lovell is the warrior poet society guy. And you've got the marrying of two different worlds of King David, the warrior and the poet. And then you have the philosopher and the warrior that's down throughout history that doesn't trust one another if they're not both. And then you've put, those two worlds kind of together. So how did this start? Because, I mean, was it by necessity when you were younger? How did you, get involved in this kind of life, the life that you live?
Yeah, well, I came out of more of the cerebral kind of artsy world. So my father was an academic, and my childhood was spent in the close proximity to colleges. So my father was at University of Buffalo, and then he was at Washington U in St. Louis. So I was surrounded by, people who spent all their time in the world of ideas, or maybe their idea of maybe working with your hands was painting. I mean, not a house. I mean, a painting.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
Right. So that was the environment that I found myself in at that point in my life. And then through a series of circumstances, I found myself in Western Pennsylvania as a ward of the state, back in the region of the country that my ancestors were from, and found myself surrounded by blue collar guys. So it was a very different world. I wasn't in the world that I had been part of. The world I had been part of was kind of bohemian. And now I was in Trump country, what we would call Trump country today. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I really liked the guys, and I really grew to respect them. And they all had this dimension to their lives that I was unfamiliar with, and that was being able to do things physically, that, pull an engine, build a porch, just these different things that they all. And most of them were blue collar guys. Most of them worked for PP&Gs of Pittsburgh Plate and Glass, or the Conrail. They were railroad guys or something like that. So they were guys that lived this all the time. And I was impressed by their agency, their ability to do things. And later on, when I went to seminary, when I was out on my first graduate program in Kansas City, I ended up working for my wife's uncle, who was a commercial contractor there. He steel and concrete stuff, office buildings, libraries, things like that. That was his niche in the market. And so I worked with him and learned by just being initially a laborer and then doing some things with him. And then I broke away with a bunch of other guys who were in seminary in that same graduate school. And we started a deck building company. And so we would all go to class in the morning and then jump in our trucks and head out to the subdivisions that were getting, all over the, put up all over the place on Olathe and so forth. So, because of that, I was introduced to a world that I would not have been introduced if I had just spent my time in Bohemia. I probably would have just become another, woke you know, kind of clone. But because of that experience, because of my, and then of course my own background, as I noted, in terms of my ancestors, they're all kind of ornery people from that part of the country.
Gotcha.
And so I had kind of a, you know, I ended up at Harvard and different places, but I always had this, I was always kind of, I guess, inoculated. I just would look at my liberal interlocutors and just kind of inwardly sneer. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys, you know, you just live in a fantasy world and you're not in touch with anything that's tangible. And if you were to find yourself on a desert island, you'd just die, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So anyway, so that helped me through the. So now it's not to say I don't love the life of the mind. I do. I mean, I read and write, and you know, I'm an editor of a magazine, and so I love that. But I don't think that it's an either or kind of situation. It's more of a both and. So I always point to the Apostle Paul, who was, you know, he was an A-lister when it came to intellectual pursuits, but he was also a tradesman. He would work with his hands.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Well, with that background, let's just, you know, for the guys that don't have that kind of background, they're not connected to the physical universe. They're not working with their hands. So how would a guy go about, you know, listening to the show and thinking, man, there's something here for me. I got to do something. I mean, I know, like, working out, lifting weights is a good way to, for, I mean, intentionally physically challenging yourself and get connected, that kind of, you know, choosing discomfort and pain to help you grow physically. But I mean, there's spiritual benefits there too. But what are some ways then for somebody to say, man, I'm neglecting this wisdom category here. How do I pursue this?
Yeah, well, I think that, the first thing to do is kind of assess, your realistic prospects. So it is true that in many ways you need to be introduced to this stuff, you know, if you're going to be proficient before a certain point in your life. So if you're further along, it's less likely that you're going to be able to pick up these practices or skills and really ever get really good. It's sort of like, you know, if you're 50 years old and you decide you want to learn to play the piano.
Yeah, good luck.
You know, it's going to, yeah, it's, you could probably become passable, but you're not going to be what you could have been if you started earlier. So, but if you're younger, you know, you can kind of, I think up until the, you know, mid-20s, get involved in having the, you know, the prospect of actually getting fairly good at this stuff. But again, you got to make time for it. Mm-hmm. So I see some racks on the wall behind you there. Hunting is not something you do just kind of like, you were just driving home and decided, I'm just going to take a, you know, half hour here and see if there's anything out there that I can shoot. You know,
right.
You know, you set aside days and times and, you know, you go places. It's you have to dedicate yourself to it.
Yeah. Right.
And make time for it. And it's a worthwhile thing. I have a lot of respect for hunting and hunters, but I think the same thing's true with this kind of stuff. You just got to make some time for it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, decide what you want to get into. If you want to get into building trades, one of the things that's great about that is, of course, obviously, if you live in a house that you own, there's stuff that you can learn to do that needs done all around you.
Right.
You know, so you just kind of work on your own house and learn. And, you know, you mentioned watching videos. I think that's actually a great thing. We live in a day and age where just about everything, you need in terms of like an instructional video is right there on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I tell you, it's when you own your own home and you start getting a bill or a bid on something that needs to be done.
Yes, right.
One of the ways that I've grown over the years is just saying, that's going to cost how much? And then thinking, well, I'm going to buy the tools and I'm going to do it and I'm going to figure it out.
Right.
I like buying and selling and trading stuff, small things. And I had a goal of, I wanted to get a good side-by-side for my property. And so I started off with a golf cart and sold it, made some money, bought it. At a yard sale, I got a little bit better side by side, fixed it up, then got another one, sold it, went to two or three, got a boat given to me, sold the boat. Long story short, I ended up getting a 2011 Polaris 800, a 4x4, love it. Runs great, but it had this ding on it. Well, come to find out, I did a process of elimination and watched these YouTube videos. And when you find out how much it costs to work on these things, you're just like, there's no way I'm going to take this to the Polaris dealer and get a bill of $2,800 to, you know, change a few things on it. So I figured out how, by YouTube video, how do I get it? I got to change these U-bolts on this drive shaft. So I had to remove the front diff and pull the drive shaft out and then figure out how to get these U-bolts out. And you just do it. And these YouTube videos help me. And tell you what, it feels good to
you
know, prepare a sermon and preach a sermon and all of that. That's all well and good. Or finish another book and put it to the side and open up your next book and all of that. But man, there's just something so valuable that you can't really put a dollar sign on with being connected and saying, I fixed that stinking side by side and I did not have to take that to Oasis Sports to give them, you know, hard-earned money. And so largely out of necessity, you know, guys can, if you just want to save some money, figure it out. And you just got to try it kind of thing. But I'm sure that's a lot of your learning along the years has been something like that as well, where it's just like, I got to figure this out.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes I've got a number of friends that are pastors who are really good at this kind of stuff, too. A friend named Troy Albee, he's up in the Boston area. He's originally from, I think, North Carolina. He's one of those rare Southern guys that go into New England and succeed. It was kind of a joke in New England that these Southern guys who would come up and say, we're going to show you how it's done. And then they would like go away 2 years later with their tail between their legs and say, no, it really is different in New England. But Troy succeeded, and he's a hunter. He's really good with his hands. He's a car guy too. So whenever he was a church planter, he planted a church on the South Shore, which is a very tony area. It's an expensive place to live. Whenever he had a bill come up, he would just flip a car, you know, he'd find a beater.
Yeah.
Fix it up, turn it around and make a few thousand, you know, like he told me that when he got a hospital bill for his wife's, you know, the delivery of a baby. Mm-hmm. And so he just flipped a car and paid it off. You know, he's that kind of guy, you know. So he told me one time that he lost his key fob, you know, and you can't use your car if you don't have a key fob. So he called the dealership and they came out and sold him a key fob for like $300 or $400. And this thing is plastic.
I just had to buy one, $300.
Yeah. So, you know, the value of the parts inside it maybe are $5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, oh, man, there's huge fat here. So what he did, this is fun. This is the kind of thing that you need to be able to do if you're going to do what we're talking about here. He just started to research it. He found a locksmith who was going out of business on the North Shore of Boston and bought all of his equipment, you know, like pennies on the dollar, brought it back. Figured out how to make key bobs himself.
Wow.
And went into business on the side selling key bobs, you know, for $200. And so he started a locksmith business and it's blossomed. He's got three full-time employees now. He's a full-time pastor and he's got these employees in this prosperous business, and all the dealerships now on the South Shore of Boston use him.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
You ought to have Troy on sometime.
Yeah.
He hops on his own land there in Massachusetts too. He's got a tree stand on his property. He's got real estate. He's really, really a fun guy.
Well, I'm going to get his, after we get down here, I'll make sure to get his contact information because I'd love to have him on. So New England, I've heard a phrase recently about New England or Maine ingenuity or something like that. So this company I just passed a reference just a little bit ago, Origin USA. So they started, you know, I know you have some Red Wing Iron Ranger boots. I've got those same boots. I like those a lot. I just got a pair of Origin Buffalo leather boots. And this company is so cool because they figured out a way, and he just said basically we just figured out every step of the way. And what I appreciate about this company is they didn't have a blueprint of every step along the way. What the guy did from the beginning was, I need to build a shop. I own 7 acres. I'm going to mark off four corners. I'm going to take a chainsaw with my father-in-law and me. We're going to clear out these 7 acres, and then we're going to build a shop. And he said, we had no idea how big it needed to be. We had no idea how we were going to do it. We just got after it. And I thought, man, that is such a good example. This guy's not a Christian guy, but it's just such a good example. And I guess it's that entrepreneurial spirit where, you know, the people who get stuff done, they don't always have the answers of how it's going to get done. They just get after it. And I think a lot of the stuff with working your hands and even from business owning and investing and doing stuff, and maybe this gets into your content we talked about last time about risk, is you just have to be willing to try. And there's so many guys, I feel like, that aren't willing to just try.
Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah, back in New England, they call them maniacs.
Okay.
Kind of a Maine rednecks. And there is a kind of the Yankee ingenuity, and it goes back a ways. A lot of those folks are dying out. It's a real shame. Like when you think about bridge rights and stuff like that, or bridge rights, you know, you got people who had great skills, and they were really people who were really thrifty. So New Englanders were known for that, being very thrifty people. Penny pinching to almost a fault.
Right.
Never throw anything away, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm going to flip my camera around here, and I want to show you something, because the value of working with hands and craftsmanship. I want to show you this desk right here.
Oh yeah, that's great.
So great. I picked this up at an estate sale, and it was. Let me see if I can get this straight here. And it's from the late 19th century, early 20th century piece.
Yeah.
And the guy that I got it from, he rebuilt all the boxes and took time in the same way that the original builder took the time to put all this together. It's just amazing. You look at it and think, my goodness, there's so much time that's put into this. And then he had, there's two slide outs on this thing. And this is the remake. The guy that I bought this from redid just almost to a T the other side of this. It had the original. So this extends your desk out, you know. This would have been used by like a business, small business owner, maybe a bank, something like that, a teller or something. But the attention to detail on this is, I mean, it's hours on end of just slow and tedious work. And when I look at it, I'm like, man, that it personally challenges me. It's like, I want to be the kind of guy that's patient enough to do something that's going to last. This is 100 years old, and now I'm reaping the benefits of some probably factory build, but still a factory that cared about craftsmanship. And I'm still reaping the benefits of that. And so, man, Chris, what you're promoting, and even at that conference, and what you're talking about in the book that you're going to hopefully, you know, be putting out on this, I think there's such value for guys, because it just slows people down as well. When I I'm forced to even do things like change my own oil. We have V8 vehicles now. I got my truck, and my wife's got a Nissan Armada. They're 7-quarter engines. And so I went to get my oil changed, and it was like, well, this is going to be 80 something bucks. And I'm like, 80 bucks? What are you talking about? You know, it was $29.99 at Walmart just with my last vehicle. What the heck?
Right.
And to be able to, you know, okay, Saturday, I'm changing the oil, and my kids are going to be right there. And for me, that just the last few years of just gathering tools and taking time has been such a real, it's been a good process for me. And, you know, I feel like I'm starting to reap some of the small benefits of trying to pursue that kind of life that you've been experiencing for decades. There's just a lot of reward there. And I'm, you know, hoping to continue to grow in that. So, and I want to encourage you to keep writing and put material out there like that, because even small comments that you make at a conference, like when's the last time you've heard a sermon on working with your hands, has an effect on somebody like me and a lot of other guys as well that are kind of rediscovering the glory of this kind of work.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that. Thanks for the encouragement. And I guess one of the things too that is a conviction of mine is that, and this is something people like Mike Rowe are known for, is there needs to be a revalorization of this stuff. So for the last 30 plus years, there's been a real downgrading of in the minds of many people with regard to the significance of working with your hands or blue collar work or trades work, that kind of thing. That's turned around. Things are getting kind of in a much healthier place. But for the longest time, that was not the case. And one of the things that I remember observing was a kind of reverse contempt or a reverse condescension. And what I mean by that is, you know, we tend to think about, you know, elites, particularly intellectuals, kind of looking down their nose at people who work with their hands. But I remember in Western Pennsylvania, there was kind of a pushback. There was a sense in which a lot of guys who did work with their hands looked down on people who couldn't.
Right.
They wouldn't say that to them because they were waiting for their paycheck first. You know, a person would pay them for doing something. But inwardly, there was a sense of, I can't believe that you needed me to come by and do that for you. That is just so, you know, sort of, everybody should know how to do that.
Right, right.
That kind of thing. By the way, if I were getting started again and I was a church planter, I'd become a handyman.
Yeah, I mean,
that's... handyman businesses is just taken off.
And just the simple and small things. I've got a friend of mine that does that, and it's amazing how he's not a pastor, but just a buddy. And it's amazing the kind of jobs that he gets. And I'm thinking, man, I could do that. Like, there's nothing to that. Okay, so for guys that are interested, man, we've been going 45 minutes. If they want to know more about you and what you've done, we can keep talking about this. It's been just encouraging. Where can people find out more about what you're doing and give a shout out to your podcast that you got going on as well so people can find your stuff?
Sure. Well, the podcast doesn't talk about this stuff very much. It's much more the cerebral, kind of stuff that we make fun of a little bit. and that's the Theology Pugcast. So, my companions with that show are academics. I'm an academic myself. I mean, I taught philosophy for a decade at the college level. But we talk about theology and ideas and stuff. And so there's that. But then if somebody is interested maybe in my sort of ongoing sort of commentary on all things in the world, you know, you can always follow me on X or Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I do have an author website, crwiley.com, but that I never update until I got another book to add. So it's not like I'm there very much.
Gotcha. So what's the next book coming down the line that's going to be released?
Well, the next book, the working title is St. Anthony's Guide to Your Best Life Now. And the subtitle is How to Survive the AI Apocalypse.
Okay.
So it's a book about artificial intelligence and transhumanism.
Interesting. Okay. My deep dive into that was just simply a Timcast where Brian Sauvay was talking to, I don't know if you saw that or not. It's a great conversation back and forth and really enjoyed that. And, you know, there's a whole world of conversation around that. Looking forward to that. That's going to be good. Well, guys, we've been talking to Chris Wiley. Chris, appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Jake.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crook podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrook.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crook, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.